Hello, everyone. I'm Brianna Breslin.
And I'm Dia Sharma.
Welcome to Yana LV, where we're on a mission to normalize mental health discussions and foster a supportive community. Yana stands for You Are Not Alone, and that's exactly what the show is all about. Here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond, we're breaking barriers and challenging the stigma surrounding mental health. Through candid conversations, expert insights, and personal stories, we're exploring the highs and lows of mental health and well-being altogether. Today, we're thrilled to be joined by Mike Schlossberg, a Pennsylvania state representative for District 132. He has shared his own mental health story and supports mental health awareness. He works to improve mental health services in Pennsylvania and wants to make sure people get the care they need with respect and understanding.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. Thanks very much for having me and for that very kind intro.
So what inspired you to first speak publicly about your experiences with mental health?
So there's actually a very easy direct answer to that, and it was the suicide of Robin Williams. I've had depression and anxiety issues probably my whole life, but I was diagnosed when I was 18. In and out of therapy is needed, on medication is needed. On medication my whole life, I should say. And it was something I never really hid, but it wasn't something I openly talked about until the suicide of Robin Williams. When he died by suicide, there was a lot of conversation around his death and around what it meant for mental illness. And I will never forget, specifically, it was some schmuck on Facebook, and I wish I could shake the guy's hand, but I defriended him on the spot, who said something along the lines of, so sad that Robin Williams killed himself, he just really needed to pray harder. And it was this very eye-opening moment for me, because it was really an in-your-face, nope. People really are that stupid about mental illness. And I was infuriated by it. I'm a keyboard warrior, and I fired off a very angry Facebook status. And then the more I thought about it, the more I said, I think it's time I shared my own story. And so after that, I wrote an op-ed in the Morning Call talking about my own experiences with mental illness, with depression, anxiety, and the need to destigmatize the issue. And that wound up really dramatically altering my career. And it put me in a place where I started being a credible messenger on the area of mental health and really trying to discuss mental illness and make sure that people got the help that they needed.
Yeah, like that response that you said that you saw on Facebook that like really fired you up. It's quite interesting how like people think and like what they say on the internet for the public to see. Like, so.
Absolutely. Very depressing.
Yeah.
But reality.
Yeah. And my whole family is a huge fan of Robin Williams. Like,
yep.
We went to see like all his movies when they would like come back in theaters, like the old ones, like Miss Doubtfire and Dead Poets Society. Yep. And I remember I always see this, like, I mean, my family would show this quote to me that he actually said. It was like, oh, suicide is a temporary problem to your solutions or something along those lines.
Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that line as well. I don't know if he actually said that one, but I've definitely heard that line.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's interesting that, you know, someone who is saying that to the world and is secretly battling these problems, I feel like that should make it so much more clear to those people that are making those comments on social media that, you know, it's clearly that even though the same people that promote it, they can be still suffering so deeply inside. And it can just show how, you know, some people are scared to reach out or really say how they're feeling so they don't, you know, seem like.
But, I mean, they're not suffering alone, and
yeah.
Nobody should suffer alone.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Something that we talk about quite a bit.
So how did your understanding of leadership shift after sharing your story?
I think on a personal level, well, two things. First, I wrote the op-ed. I sent it to the Morning Call. They said, wow, we really love this. We're going to publish this tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay, good. I'm going to go have a massive anxiety attack. I'll be right back, and sort of dipped. And once I calmed down, I started asking friends and colleagues, like, have I lost my mind here? Guys, is this going to end my career? And they're like, no, this is a good thing. This is going to make your career. And actually, with my best friend, who's also one of my colleagues in the house, was like, you don't get it. This is going to change your career. You are, by showing this level of vulnerability, you're going to become a mental health guy, and it's going to be what you're known for. And
yeah.
He was right. And it made me realize that people, from a leadership perspective, you're asking me about leadership specifically, people want their leaders to be vulnerable. They want them to be real. And by talking about my own struggles, and really the biggest struggles I've endured in my life, it made the issue of mental health a little bit more accessible for others. You know, there's an irony in a way people, I think, sometimes think that politicians really are that smooth and slick. And the truth is, at least at my level, the vast majority of state representatives are genuinely normal people who struggle like everybody else. And I think others appreciated hearing that. Second, and I touched on this in my other answer, it really brought forward the idea of a credible messenger. As somebody who has experienced mental illness, I know what it's like to be in that level of pain. But at the same time, we are always going to need people who look and sound like their constituents and who look and sound like the audience that they're speaking to be able to be credible on those issues. I will always be able to speak to men on mental illness, to white people, to Jewish people on mental illness, but I can't speak to everybody. And that's why it's so important that we get other people involved in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like someone with your type of authority, it really shows exactly how, like, I feel like you said it so perfectly, like how vulnerable everyone can be. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're the governor, the president, your next door neighbor, you yep. know, everyone is suffering with it. It doesn't matter how much power you have. And I feel like someone with such great influence like you, and that saying that and sharing your story and how, you know, your personal beliefs on mental health, it shows how prevalent it is.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to add, like something that Bronna said and also you said, Mike, was like the idea of authority. Like so many people, I guess, like look up to like people on higher authority because, you know, they're like representing us in a way. And mm-hmm. seeing someone that you can relate to, seeing someone that is like vulnerable and their authentic selves like really builds a connection like between that person, like you, for example, and then like your audience. So yep. I think it builds a connection that like we really need.
Definitely. And that's obviously the plan. I will add that a good portion of the time when I'm talking to others about mental illness, I'm trying to destigmatize the issue, obviously. But because I am an elected official, mm-hmm. people aren't going to be like, they still, no matter how normal, I promise I really am as I sit here, you know, the reason the background is blurred is because my house is a train wreck because I spent the past 3 days in Harrisburg and it's impossible to keep up. And we've got dogs barking in the background, et cetera. Like as normal as I know I really am, people are always going to look at elected officials or on a much different level of celebrities as someone in like a, you know, it's hard to relate sometimes. So a big portion of the time when I'm talking to people about mental illness, I'm trying to get them to speak about their own story. And I'm trying to inspire them to do that. So, and if I can do that, then it's a win.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned about vulnerability, so in what ways has being vulnerable helped you connect more deeply with the people you serve?
I can't tell you how many people have said to me, me too. Honestly, one of my running jokes has become, I now know the prescriptions of more people in Lehigh Valley than I ever anticipated. And by learning about what other people are suffering from, it puts you in a position where you're more relatable. And I will tell you, more importantly, it makes me feel like a better representative because I know more about what my constituents are enduring, and that gives me a better opportunity to try to fix it.
Yeah, I agree. I think so many people like will relate to it, and like even people who don't feel comfortable enough to share, like hearing someone else's vulnerability, it kind of like yep. creates a safe space for other people to share as well.
100%. That really is how it's worked for me. And I'm very grateful to be in that position. We are supposed to, at our core, represent people. Yeah. And if I'm in a position where I can do that well, I'm happy.
What advice would you offer to young people who are struggling with anxiety or depression, but feel afraid to ask for help?
I think the first thing people have to understand is just how that their situation is significantly more widespread than they realized. One of the great lines I've heard about mental illness and depression, anxiety specifically, is depression lies. It makes you feel like you're not only are you worthless and a terrible person, but it makes you feel like you're the only one. And the vast majority of the time, that's just not true. So the first thing that I would say to somebody is you have to understand that there are millions, tens of millions of people throughout the country, throughout the world, who are suffering like you are right now. And once you can establish that with a person, you put them in a better position to go, okay, well, how do these other people deal with it? Well, they get help. Let's talk about what the help is. Stigma is still very real, and it's not so much how others view mental illness, but I think there's a lot of self-stigma. I think people don't realize just how deeply problematic and prevalent mental illness is. And if we can get people in a position to understand that a little bit more, I think you can do a better job of really getting people the help that they need.
I understand what you're saying there. And I think, like, I've seen scenarios, like, within my own family or other elder individuals, like, parents who, you know, who see, you know, because I feel like they're more open to, like, social media. It's like Facebook. And,
right.
You know, it's like my own parents are, you know, they're not huge mental health advocates, but they're, like, you know, like, they obviously always support me.
They get
but,
it.
Yeah, but only to a certain extent, I would say. Like, I've seen so many, like, even teachers at my previous school, like, they don't totally get it. They don't think it should be as talked about as it is now, because I feel like that's not how they grew up, and I feel like that is, you know, the obviously people need to be more open, I would say, to these discussions.
Yep, absolutely. Clearly agree.
So, as someone in public office, how do you balance mental wellness with the pressures of your role?
I mean, I'm lucky that I've kind of gotten used to it. I've been in office for 13 years, and certainly the burdens of this job, just like, and to be clear, the burdens of any job, you know, will add to stress, and there'll be absolutely moments like, I think I'm going to make a therapy appointment because I'm going to lose my mind if I don't deal with insert issue here. And that's honestly what it comes down to. It comes down to actually, I mean, self-care is such a kind of floofy term, but like it comes down to doing what I need to do to actually make sure I'm getting mental health treatment if I need it. I don't see a therapist all the time, but I do go in as needed. So I jokingly refer to it as a tune-up every now and then. But you also learn how to prioritize the things that'll keep you sane. I work out like a crazy person. When I'm in Harrisburg, if there's any way I can, I go home because I prefer to sleep in my own bed and actually hang out with my wife and my children. I force myself to relax despite whatever madness is going on at any given moment. And if you do that, you can take care of yourself and actually be okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think balance is key, like you said. Exercising, like meeting your family, like your loved ones, and just like taking a break. Because I feel like burnout is so real and it can happen to, like, basically, obviously, anyone. So, like, understanding yourself and understanding, like, your potential, like, max, I mean. And then, like, taking breaks, like, according to that, I think really helps.
In a high-pressure universe where we live, that's something I think everybody needs to understand and do a better job of.
I actually had an experience of burnout. Like, I think right when I graduated, when Dee and I graduated high school, I was so just like, okay, I don't even want to go out. I just want to lay in my bed. Like, I've studied much. Exactly. Like, I was like, I'll help, you know, get to my summer job interviews later. And then two weeks go by, and I try to go to the gym, like, once a week now, or, like, twice a week.
There you go.
And for, like, 3 weeks, I just sat in my bed. I, like, could not. I was like, I just was such, like, I was stuck in the habit.
We're done here. Yep. Like, we're just sitting down. It's over.
So we're going to take a short break. We're talking with our guest, Mike Schlossberg, about mental health on the political side here on Yana LV. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Yana LV. We're here with Mike Schlossberg. Now we'll continue our conversation about breaking the stigma on the political side. So why do you believe it's important for public figures to speak about mental health?
Multiple reasons. First, it's one of those issues that still, despite the very significant gains that we've actually made over the past few years, it's an issue that still exists in the shadows, and it's an issue that's still hidden, and it shouldn't be. As elected officials, despite all the grief that we get, some deservedly, some not, people still listen to us, and if our voices are going to continue to have any sort of meaning, we need to make sure we use them the right way. So that's the first thing. But second of all, the more we talk about it, the more likely we are to make real policy gains in the area of mental health. And that's an area where stigma really does still matter. We still have people who don't, you know, in public policy, there is still plenty of examples where behavioral health and physical health are treated very, very differently. And until that day, actually, until we view behavioral health and physical health in this at the same level, we're going to continue to struggle to get people the mental health help that they need when it comes to public policy, when it comes to investments.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the idea of breaking the stigma and just talking about it more to, like, create better policies is, like, the first step. Because, like, the more we normalize the conversation, the, like, less uncomfortable or awkward it will be, and, like, more people will start talking about it, which will, gain greater awareness about it.
Exactly.
So how has your personal experience shaped your approach to policymaking?
That's a great question. And it's one that gets a little awkward sometimes, because one of the things that's always going to be in the back of my head, and I know what the answer is this an issue that I would care about so much if it didn't affect me? The answer is no. Every single elected official is influenced by their personal experiences. Now, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's a selfish thing. But there's no doubt in my mind that I wouldn't be nearly as invested in this one if it wasn't something that I personally experienced. Other than that, I think knowing the specifics about the issue have made people more likely to turn to me with questions or looking for advice. And that, in turn, has given me a much greater understanding of the experiences that others have endured. And that has given me the information that I need to do this job better.
Yeah, I feel like it's good to, you know, consider other people's opinions about, you know, what you're going to say, you know, what action you're going to take. Like, I feel like it's always so important to consider, you know, how others are going to feel about it.
Definitely.
So what supports or policies do you wish more states prioritize for mental health?
The biggest thing that I have tried to push here is workforce investments. The biggest challenge in the area of mental health is simply that we don't have enough supports available. So if somebody, you know, I talk about stigma all the time. That's a very important conversation to have, don't get me wrong. But if you can break the barriers surrounding stigma and somebody says, okay, I'm going to get help, and they call their therapist and it's like, well, we don't have an opening for 6 months, then what good have we actually done? So I would love to see this state prioritize workforce investments more. We've done real work in that area. We've actually really pushed more dollars into behavioral health, but we've got a long way to go. So that involves actually putting more money into physician loan repayments and into increasing reimbursement rates to make it easier for people to afford to get the mental health help that they need.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, like you said, the idea that, yeah, we have to break the stigma and it's very important, but if you can't, like, for example, get, like, a therapy appointment, like, 6 months, then, like, it doesn't have much, like, meaning, or, like, you have to, like, kind of have it done now in a way and, like, just keep it moving, so.
Absolutely.
Can you share a moment where someone's response to your story deeply moved you?
The one that sticks out, two. So I go to schools all the time. It's actually one of the most fun parts of this job. And I went to Trexler Middle School. Now, this was pre-COVID. And I did my thing. And, you know, I always speak about my mental health challenges in those audience in particular. And a young girl handed me a note afterwards. And the note talked about all of the mental health things that she had endured, how she was suicidal, and how she had a lot of gender-related confusions. And that's an important thing to mention as well, that certain populations are much more likely to suffer from mental illness or suicide, including the transgender population, when you have 40% of that demographic has attempted suicide. And that's not because of their gender confusion, that's because of the societal issues surrounding gender confusion. That's something that I'm particularly passionate about. Anyway, this was an eighth grade girl, and that really, really hit me very hard. And I spoke with the school principal, because there's laws surrounding automatic reporters, especially among people in authority, that if somebody says I'm going to hurt someone else or myself, you have to automatically report it. I'm not an automatic reporter, but I've always thought it was better to treat myself as an automatic reporter. So turned it over to the school principal, and they took it from there. But that was like pre-COVID, and it stuck with me. I will also say, one time I was on a panel conversation, and somebody told me that they were in an inpatient facility, they were hospitalized for a while, and they cut out my article, my op-ed on mental health, and they taped it to their wall of their room when they were in the hospital. Hey, that one stuck with me. That, and I've had people tell me that, people tell me that my op-ed came up in a therapist conversation. Like, if I've made my way into therapist conversations, that's probably a good sign. I will happily take that.
Yeah. And that's so sweet. I think I'm just trying to think of even how to respond to that because I'm just imagining it in my head. That is so sweet.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me go, all right, I clearly have the right idea here.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Like all the moments you just talked about, like how you got mentioned, and then specifically like the hospital story, like taping to the wall. Because I feel like specifically in those times, like you, I feel like hope is your like biggest thing. Like, you know, you're kind of going for, like in the, like with hope, and like you gave someone hope, and I think that's such a beautiful thing. So yeah.
Well, and it's why truly it's why you do this job. You can do great things. We get a lot of as public officials. Cool, I get it. But you can do really great things, and you can actually make a really positive difference in people's lives. And as long as I feel like I have an opportunity to do that, this job's still fun. And hopefully the good people of the 132nd District will let me stay.
Yeah. So what do you think is the biggest misconception about mental health?
I think there's a lot of ideas that it's somehow easy to move past and that you can just snap yourself out of it. And I don't think anybody who has actually suffered from mental illness believes that. But I do think that there's a lot of people who are fortunate enough to have not endured it who actually are like, why don't you just smile? I think that's at least on a personal level. And even among people who acknowledge that it's more significant than that, I think there's a lot of folks who actually think you can still just shake your way loose. And that's obviously not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think like so many people think that it's just as easy as like snapping it off, turning it off, like just moving on with your life. Oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, like get past this. Just put a smile on, like do something that makes you happy. But it's so much more complicated than that, because I feel like personally, like in my experience and also like individuals who I know, they've tried doing that. Like obviously like struggling is not an easy thing and you try to like make it better, but it's just not that easy. Like you need support. You need people around you. And it's like it's easier than just like talking about it and oh, it's over. Like it's gonna live with you, it's gonna stay with you. So I feel like those experiences really shape you.
Absolutely. That's definitely been my experience as well.
Yeah, and I would say also, because I actually just booked, I was actually talking to Dia about it, because I mean obviously I tell her all the time, you know, if I'm feeling down, because Dia says she makes my day so much better. And you know, so I was talking to her about it. I was like, hey, Dia, like, because, you know, we call all the time. And I was like, Dia, I just booked a therapy appointment. You know, like, I haven't gone to therapy in so long, like, years, like, since my freshman year. And she was like, oh, like, me too. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, this is so great. And,
awesome.
You know, so I feel like finding just someone, even if it's not, like, a group of people, I feel like if you just have one person to talk to that just makes you feel so safe and so secure, it helps so much. Like,
absolutely.
I just, you know, I feel like if I told, like, you know, like there's different types of audiences that react to saying you're going to therapy, you know, because some people think, oh, I don't, you know, I don't need a therapist, you know, I don't need someone to talk to. But I feel like, you know, or judge you for going to a therapist, I'm saying. Yeah. Like, it's so important to find the right person or, like, yeah, a group of people, but I feel like you only just need really one person to make you feel so special. Like,
absolutely.
And I feel like it's so important to find that person in different scenarios, I would say. Like, when you go to college, when you're at home, it's so nice. And especially, I feel like having a cell phone, too, and just giving it a call.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it makes it so much better, I would say. And,
absolutely.
Like, the smile thing you said, I think that was so good. Like, both of you kind of touched on it. Like,
oh, yeah, that, like, oh, just put on a smile. Like fake it till you make it. Like, it's not.
I feel like that's not, you know, like, yeah, in a way, okay, I get it, you're telling. Like, I feel like, okay, they're not trying to give, like, a negative impact on me. Like, they're trying to, like, make it better, I guess. Like, make me, you know, happier in a sense. But I feel like telling me just to smile, like, it's also, like, okay, you see that I'm down. You see this individual's obviously not feeling the greatest, you know, like you're just tired of it, so you're just like, oh, put on a smile. Like, that's how I look at it.
Yeah No, I agree with like both of you. And also like what Bronna said, that oh, like don't like put up, like don't be sad, don't be upset, you're making me sad. Like, I feel like it's just like, come on, like, are you serious? You're like making this about yourself, like when I'm in a time of struggle and like I'm like being vulnerable to you.
It's not great.
Yeah. And another thing I really wanted to say was, like,
Not great.
Yeah, when you and Bronna were, like, talking about, like talking to like certain people, like for example, like therapy and just like going to people you really trust. Like obviously Bronna is one of them in my life, but also an experience I've had like actually this past year was that I was going through something and someone I like didn't know, like I couldn't imagine in like so long that they were going through the same thing. And actually we talked about it and like we actually got like connected on that level, which I think is such a like cool thing. Like people you wouldn't imagine, people you couldn't expect, like maybe you run in different crowds, like whatever it is, sometimes you're going through that same thing and those connections, like I feel like you can build with those people and they do like stick with you and last with you forever. Because like for example, like in college, if I'm going through a tough time or this happens again, I know that that person might understand.
Yep.
Yeah. So what kind of mental health culture would you like to see in government and politics?
Really good question. One that values it at the same way that we value other problems, including physical health. And more importantly, one that's willing to actually invest in mental illness and understand not only what mental illness is, but that it's deserving of real dollars, not just the remnants of money that we have lying around. That's what I'm looking for more than anything else, for people in politics to take mental illness seriously.
Yeah, I agree with what you said, like the idea that people take physical health so important. Like, for example, if you like broke your arm or you like teared your ACL, like you quickly like take them to the doctor, like, oh, is she gonna be okay? And then you like do like physical therapy and you like start the healing process really early because it's such a big injury. But I feel like mental health also, it is like mental, it's a part of you. And people just like ignore that. Absolutely. As something that, oh, it's emotional. Oh, you can fix it. Oh, it's not that big of a deal. But it's so much more than that. Yep. And like you said, like taking it seriously is the first step because so many people just dismiss it that, oh, it doesn't really matter. But if we actually take it seriously, we can make more progress that way.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And that's an area where like I've been in the minority in the legislature, meaning that, you know, I'm a Democrat. There are more Republicans than Democrats. Then a couple of years ago, it switched, but it turned in the majority. The one thing that no one can ever take away from you in politics is, or as a citizen, more importantly, is your voice. And anybody can use their voice to try to advocate for change. And that's what I've tried to do.
Yes. So we're out of time for this episode. Thank you so much.
Thank God, because the contractors are getting loud, so that works well.
Thank you so much, Mike Schlossberg, for joining us this evening. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find past episodes and other programs at WDIY.org, on the WDIY app, and on major podcast platforms. I'm Dia Sharma.
I'm Brian Breslin.
And this is WDIY 88.1. We'll see you next time on Yana LV. And remember, you are not alone.